Welcome to Speak Up and Stay Alive Radio with author, speaker, and your host, Pat Rulo. Serving you a generous helping of everything you need to know to help you and your loved ones stay safe during any doctor or hospital visit. The program is not intended to replace medical advice from a licensed professional, but rather to encourage you to become a well-informed participant in your health and well-being. And now, your host, Pat Rulo.
Hello and welcome. I'm Pat Rulo, the voice for patient safety, where each week we delve into little-known healthcare and hospital hazards, as well as other fringe topics that affect your health and well-being. I'm so happy you've taken the time to join me, and today I have lots to share with you. So, let's dig right in, shall we? Today, we are going to get an inside view into anorexia and uncover brutal truths that you may not be aware of and quite surprised to find out. My very special guest is Rachel Richards. Rachel is the author of Hungry for Life, a memoir unlocking the truth inside an anorexic mind. The book quickly jumped to an Amazon bestseller and has now sold over 5,000 copies worldwide. Following the success of her book, Rachel narrated and produced the audiobook version of Hungry for Life, and she is excited to share it with you. Returning to school after earning her BFA in theater from Hofstra University, she graduated from the Swedish Institute College of Health Sciences and started her own private practice in Manhattan as a licensed and board-certified massage therapist. She also hosts a popular YouTube channel, has spoken to the National Alliance on Mental Illness, has written several articles for Recovery Warriors, an online magazine dedicated to helping eating disorder sufferers get the treatment they need, and she has written numerous articles on health and self-care, which can be found at her website, rachel-richards.com. After years of struggling with an eating disorder, Rachel turned her life around and now helps others in pain. And she is here right now to help us unlock the truth inside an anorexic mind. So welcome to the network, Rachel.
Thank you so much. I'm delighted to be here.
I am delighted to have you here. There's just so much to uncover and unlock here. So I think we should just dig right in, yeah? Let's begin by sharing your personal story, and then we'll get into the writing of your book. And hopefully, if time allows, you can lead us into the bigger picture. So maybe as just a point of reference, share your childhood with us.
Well, the seeds of my eating disorder could have been seen when I was in preschool, really, very, very young. And the actual behaviors manifested starting when I was 8 in third grade. This was very, very young at the time. Unfortunately, today that's not so anymore. When I was a child in nursery school, kindergarten, there was a lot of anger, and I wasn't really sure where that came from. I grew up in a very loving home. One of the themes in my book is that anybody can develop an eating disorder. It doesn't have to be something that grew out of a particular trauma. So I was never really sure what propelled me into this sort of state of anger and resentment, but I was getting in trouble a lot at school. I ended up having a lot of bullies picking on me. I was sort of the troublemaker, the bad kid. In fact, my first grade teacher used to call me a bad girl all the time. I felt out of control. I felt like nobody understood what I was going through, and I really didn't understand it myself at the time. I was really too young to know what was going on or to be able to communicate it. So in third grade, I decided to sort of take the reins and figured out how I can get control over some things in my life. And that ended up being two things, really, my food intake and my studies. So I decided I was going to get straight A's, absolute perfection, and that I could actually start controlling what I put into my body. I remember I was in line for lunch in third grade, and I saw some different colors of milk cartons. And I finally asked the person who took the money, what are the different colors? And she said, well, that blue one is skim milk, and the red one is whole milk. And I said, what's skim milk? And she said, oh, that one doesn't have any fat. And I thought, oh, fat. Wait, so I've been drinking whole milk all along, and that's going to make me fat. I don't want to be fat. And so I started to choose the skim milk. And I had learned in a science experiment in class that bread has starch in it, and starch makes you fat. And I thought, oh, gosh, well, I have white bread every day, and that has loads of starch. It's going to make me fat. So I started restricting that. And little by little, I began to lose weight when I should have been gaining it. I stopped growing. Other people got taller. You can see me in my school pictures. First, I'm in the back row, then the middle row, then the front row. And nobody really knew what was going on because this was kind of unheard of at the time, particularly in one so young. When I stopped eating so much, the brain chemistry changes. So I wasn't thinking as clearly. And the actual makeup of your brain starts to change, starts to alter, and propels you further and further into the eating disorder. So what ended up happening was by the time I reached college, and this was going on for ages back and forth, I actually ended up in seventh grade getting so depressed from all the perfectionism, and I developed obsessive compulsive disorder. These things often go along with eating disorders and anorexia, particularly with the perfectionism. Everything had to be an even number. I had to line up everything in my room exactly right. I had to repeat everything so it was even. So if I said something, I had to whisper it again. I had to turn the faucet on and off four times. I mean, these things were really interfering with my life. When I was in seventh grade, I ran away from home because I got so frustrated. I was throwing a temper tantrum, which was very common for me, and probably over a test that I had to take the next day, and I probably thought, oh, gosh, I'm going to fail, and I started acting up, and my parents probably tried to calm me down, and I got angry, and I ran out, and they called the police, and the police actually dragged me back into my home, and I ended up going to the hospital and being monitored for a few days because they were afraid I was going to hurt myself. After that, I started to get put on medication and see a psychologist and a psychiatrist, and I hated that. I rejected the medication. I rejected the therapy, so it didn't work, and continued to sort of go up and down a little bit until I reached college. Once I graduated from my junior year of college, I was skeletal. I was absolutely skeletal. I was on my own. I had nobody monitoring what I did. I was kind of missing out on what they call the best years of your life. I couldn't really make any friends. I was depressed. I was isolated completely in my own world. I just studied all the time and drank a lot of coffee, black coffee, of course. So I ended up being forced into the hospital after my junior year. And it was like being treated like cattle. This treatment program was just, I think, shameful. They expected everybody in this eating disorder treatment program to be the same. They had this as part of the inpatient program. Everybody to have the same symptoms, everybody to act the same way. We were watched all the time. The worst was expected of us. We were just told to eat, be quiet, and just eat. The nurses almost seemed like we were taking up their time when they could have been spending their time dealing with more important patients, like real patients with real illnesses, not some kids who stopped eating because they wanted to be thin. Not understanding that there was so much more to it than that. It was about control and fear and anger and unexpressed longings and things we couldn't communicate, that we were using food to try to cry out in desperation that we needed help. And that just wasn't understood. And so there was no compassion. There was no validation. What I ended up doing was eating as much as I was afraid of it, just so I could get out of the hospital. And I still didn't gain enough that I really should have been able to be released, but my insurance ran out. And that's a big problem for people with eating disorders. Insurance just doesn't cover the necessary treatment. And that's a whole other topic. But so I got out and I relapsed. And I relapsed worse than I had ever been before. I was on my deathbed by the time I graduated college. I went up to get my diploma, an absolute skeleton. And once again, was forced into the hospital. And now I had really hit rock bottom. Now, I was an actress. And I was pursuing theater, and that was my major in school. And I longed to be on stage. I longed to pursue my acting career, and I knew that I couldn't do that looking the way I did. So I figured, okay, I've got three choices. I could go on the way I am, not be able to pursue my passion, continue being put into hospitals, and keep going until this eventually killed me. I could die because I was contemplating suicide very seriously at the time, or I could live and try this thing at life. And I had seen people, you know, from the inside out, I'm watching people live for almost from this, from inside this brick building. I'm looking out of this tiny window and people are living and enjoying life and pursuing passions and looking like they're having fun and they're really interested in things. I was never really interested in anything, maybe theater, but that was it. And it looked great. And I wondered if that was ever possible for me. So that third option to live, it was the most terrifying one of all. I knew I didn't want to go on the way I was going. That was a no. I could not live like that any longer. So it came down to life or death. And something very, very, very deep inside of me said that this life isn't over for me yet. I think there might be something more to it. I think there might be something in store for me. And it was a little different than a lot of people who have eating disorders want to get their lives back. And the problem was that I never really had a life, a real life to begin with. So I didn't have anything to get back. I was starting from square one. I was a child learning how to eat and have relationships and, you know, just live like an adult. Here I was 21 years old and I didn't know, you know, how to basically take care of myself. And so I decided to give it a try. And then came the hardest part, which was recovery. And I had to face my worst fears, which was eating and gaining weight. And there's a horrible irony about that because the brain has changed and I'm only thinking irrational thoughts, I could not receive therapy. It wouldn't work on me. I was thinking too irrationally. So I just had to trust and eat until I gained enough weight that my neural pathways somewhat returned to normal and I could actually have a conversation and find out what was going on and express myself in a therapeutic environment. And I mean, these things slowly, slowly happened. And after my inpatient, insurance ran out, I went into a day program, which was 5 days a week, all day long. And I don't think I would have fully recovered without going into that. I really needed that constant supervision. And the day program was really neat because they taught you how to live. If inpatient taught me how to eat, day program taught me how to live. They had things like movies and tennis lessons and dance lessons, and we went shopping. And none of these things interested me at the time. I was still very depressed. I just sort of went through the motions. And little by little, as my body became more nourished and my brain became healthier, I started to get interested in little things here and there. And what really helped me recover was finding my passion in life, finding who I was behind the disorder. So I discovered massage therapy and went to school for it and discovered how great it felt to help other people, not be the one that was always helped, but how gratifying and rewarding it was to help other people who were in pain and who needed help. And I finally got into a romantic relationship, which was just amazing that I never thought was possible for me. And I discovered how much I loved writing and ended up writing my book and several articles. And I am now hosting a YouTube channel where I put out all of these videos on health and wellness and self-care. And I had a child, which, I mean, that just blows my mind that I have a child, that my body was able to recuperate enough that I was able to get pregnant and have a little girl who's now 5 years old. All of these things fill my life now. And there's just no room for an eating disorder, because my head and my life is filled with all of these good, nourishing, wonderful things. And I have a responsibility to nourish my body and keep myself healthy, because I have a responsibility to my family and my readers and my viewers and to myself. And I am so, so glad I chose life, because it was so worth it. It was, it was one hell of a fight, but it was so worth it.
What a journey. Oh my gosh. There were a lot of dark times there. From what you're saying, sounds like there are moments and opportunities with this disorder to actually make conscious decisions. Because you said in third grade, you made the conscious decision to use food and your studies to control your environment. And then as you got older, you made a conscious decision to live. So that's very interesting to me, that there is that that's available to you. But How do you find the strength to access that?
I think it was, maybe nothing short of miraculous that I chose life when I got into the hospital. But like I said, there was just something so deep inside of me that thought, hey, maybe I have a chance at this acting thing. Maybe I have a chance at a relationship or a child one day. Maybe my family is going to be devastated without me. And so very, very faint, very in the background. But I decided to start eating, and then I figured, well, I could always change my mind, I guess, later on. But I started, and, as I started nourishing my body, my brain became more rational. And so just like it propelled me into the eating disorder, it was helping me get out of it.
Right. And I think the whole thought of the brain of someone who is underweight becomes altered. And I'm sure that people just looking at your situation, looking at it from the outside, they don't understand that connection of the brain, the whole physiological connection that goes on with it.
There's a lot of strength in people with eating disorders. And you see people with anorexia like me who are overachievers, who are doing a million and one things and doing them successfully. Mm-hmm. It's pretty ironic. While their bodies are wasting away, they're able to really be productive. And I was. And so, yes, there's a lot of strength in decision making. It's not always rational, but this particular decision was. And it's very frustrating when people think, oh, why don't you just eat? Why don't mm-hmm. you just change the way you're thinking?
Right.
And I think it was that frustration that ended up propelling me to write the book.
Right.
I wanted people to understand what was going on the inside. Because if they do, and we're talking about, people who know somebody or have a loved one with an eating disorder, if you really understand what's going on, then you'll be able to help them better. You'll be able to empathize, and you'll be able to help them get the treatment they need. You'll know what to say that will be helpful and not harmful. So I almost wrote it more for loved ones and caregivers than I even did for people with eating disorders, although it can be helpful for them as well.
And I think the title of your book, Hungry for Life, is just the best title.
Oh, thank you.
No, it's a perfect title. So you decided to write it out of that frustration. And I bet it was a bit cathartic for you as well, though, to put that on paper, probably painful at times.
Very painful. And I didn't even see it as cathartic at first. I'm like, why am I reliving this? Ridiculous. And it took me 10 years to write. I was back and forth. I picked it up. I put it down. It went through many, many different iterations and edits. And there were times that I was writing that tears were just streaming down my face. And I'm thinking, why am I doing this? And, I didn't consider it cathartic at all. And there were times that I wrote it that I started laughing and cracking up and realizing how much humor there was in things that I never thought could possibly be humorous. So I went on this whole emotional journey. And it wasn't until it was finished and done and I could call it a book that I realized that it was cathartic, because it didn't overlap into my life today. It was a story that had a beginning, a middle, and an end. And I could kind of put that book down and move on with my life.
Mm-hmm.
Not that it didn't exist. It still did. And it informs who I am today. And everything makes up the person you are that happened in your past. But it had its place in my life. And that didn't mean it had to be here now.
Right. Well, hopefully your book, as you say, will then help caretakers and parents and family and friends who are aware of someone who has anorexia to deal with them in a more compassionate way, to give them some validation and not just say, as you mentioned before, here, eat and stop,
mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. And that can get into a power struggle, which doesn't benefit anybody mm-hmm. and could actually, make the person want to go further, want to think further into this disorder. So it's very important to understand and to know exactly what you're saying and who you're talking to at the time
mm-hmm.
In order to help get treatment. Ultimately, it's got to be the person's decision. So you can't make somebody do something they don't want to do, really. But you could be a huge help.
Right.
And it's so different now, because now it's all over. My book is just one of many, many, many resources. People are writing books all the time about their experiences. There's online. The internet, it's good and bad. There are sites that actually glorify eating disorders, but you can also get so much help online. Like the Recovery Warriors website that I write for has all of these treatment programs that can help you. You can share your stories with others. It's not as isolating. I felt like I was the only one in the world who was having these thoughts and feelings. I was completely by myself, living in a bubble. And it's not that way anymore. People have access to so much more information and company, you know, to help out.
I saw it somewhere on your website where you said that recovery is possible and is probable. So there's hope.
Absolutely. The earlier you catch it, the more likely a successful result and the decrease in the amount of time that it might take to recover. So the earlier, the better, always. But it's never too late. I mean, I was on my deathbed and I'm living proof. I mean, you know, I'm a wife and a mom and you know, a private practitioner in the healthcare field, it's not too late ever. You can always get help. When you're as far gone as I was, really the only help I think that is going to help is to go into an inpatient program. You really need to be supervised 24/7 if it's become that bad. You really need to get into a program. But, you know, I wonder that when I was really young, if people had known more about eating disorders and thought it could even be possible in someone so young and saw that I was hurting, saw that something was wrong and acknowledged the red flags that were going up all over me. Mm-hmm. If I would have even developed the eating disorder at all, if it could have been caught early and something could have been done, I wonder if my life would have been really different. And I think there's a lot of hope for people today because so much more is known. And there's so much more information out there. I think a lot of young people have a much better chance at recovery or even avoidance.
Absolutely. And just this conversation today, we do not know who this will impact and who it will enlighten. And obviously your book, Hungry for Life, is going to impact so many people. And as you say, perhaps help them avoid years of, wow, almost horror that you had to go through. And you came out of it finding your passions. I'm happy you're in a good place, my friend. I really, really am. Well, now, is there anything we missed that you wanted to bring up today?
Just leave everyone with exactly what you quoted me on. Recovery is possible, and not only that, it is probable. And it's not too late for anyone. So if you know someone or you're suffering yourself, get help. It's so worth it. It's so worth it on the other side. There is so much to do. There is so much life to live. There is so much to feel. And it's so worth it.
Wow. What an inspiration you are. I'm happy we had this opportunity.
Oh, me too.
Yeah, I really, really am. I wish we can continue this on. Maybe we'll have to do this again just because there's more I'd like to share about you and the whole eating disorder. Where can folks go then to learn more about you and where can they purchase your book?
Well, my book is on Amazon, and I'm also on Goodreads. And if you're interested in the audio version, that's also available on Amazon, and it's also on Audible.com. I'm on Kindle Unlimited, so you can get it for free if you're a Kindle Unlimited member. You can see my website at rachel-richards.com, and I've got a bunch of articles on wellness there, and it says all about my massage practice. And I am happy to receive emails. My email address is rachelrichardsmassage@gmail.com, and I will always answer if anybody wants to reach out and ask any questions. You can find my YouTube channel. It's Rachel Richards Massage, and see tons of videos. I actually have a lot of videos on self-massage, so that's pretty nice. Teaches you how to massage yourself and take care of different aches and pains you might be having.
Excellent. So the book, Hungry for Life by Rachel Richards, was written with parents and caretakers in mind with the intention of promoting empathy, awareness, and the knowledge necessary to effectively help a loved one overcome an eating disorder. So I encourage everyone to head over to Rachel's website, rachel-richards.com.
Thank you so much. I am honored to have had this interview. Thank you so much, Pat. You're a great interviewer, too.
Oh, thank you. It's been my pleasure, and I really hope we can do this again. Thank you, Rachel.
Me too. Thank you.
Eating disorders are serious but treatable mental illnesses that can affect people of every age, sex, gender, race, ethnicity, and socioeconomic group. National surveys estimate that 20 million women and 10 million men in the United States will have an eating disorder at some point in their lives. While no one knows for sure what causes eating disorders, a growing consensus suggests that it is a range of biological, psychological, and sociocultural factors. For more information, visit nationaleatingdisorders.org. That's nationaleatingdisorders.org. And their helpline number is 1-800-931-2237. That is 1-800-931-2237. If you have a family issue, a couple's issue, parenting or child situations that need attention, give the Relationship Center of North Canton your attention. People often seek help from a relational therapist to address behavioral problems, relationship issues, or mental and emotional disorders. For more information or to schedule an appointment, you can reach the Relationship Center at their website, therelationshipcenterofneohio.com. The NE stands for Northeast, the Relationship Center of NEOhio.com. Or leave a message at 330-497-2452. That is 330-497-2452. Start the conversation today. The Relationship Center, helping one family, one couple, one individual, one at a time. Let them help you. The Relationship Center of NEOhio.com. For 27 years, Ray, the firewood guy, continues to be Northeast Ohio's choice when it comes to quality seasoned firewood. Homes throughout the area stay warm and toasty thanks to Ray's efficient home delivery service. And if you dine in or around the greater Cleveland area, no doubt you've experienced wood-fired cuisine using Ray's wood. Over 20 of the area's finest restaurants impress their patrons with the consistent quality and flavor that makes Ray's wood the choice for local restaurant owners. So whether your desire is to create warmth and add ambiance to your home or business, or if your restaurant requires predictable wood-burning results and reliable delivery service, Ray, the firewood guy, is your firewood guy. Visit the website raythefirewoodguy.com for more information and to find some firewood-inspired cutting boards and beautiful handmade jewelry. That's raythefirewoodguy.com. Or give him a call, 440-226-9681. That's 440-226-9681.
Hi, this is Jana Panaritis, host of the AgeWise podcast, where we hear from the healthcare system's hidden workforce, the millions of family caregivers whose stories of devotion and courage will shock and inspire you. Join me as we shake up the conversation on care, and know you're not alone. Listen to a brand new episode every week at speakuptalkradio.com. To learn more about the show, visit the AgeWise website. That's AgeWYZ.com.
Hi there, this is Mrs. Green, and I would love for you to become a part of my world. Mrs. Green's world is an engaged international community and a global movement of ideas and action made up of people who truly care about their own health and the health of this great planet of ours. In Mrs. Green's world, we don't tell you what to think, we just want you to. Our guests from all over the world will give you plenty of things to think about. Please visit my website at mrsgreensworld.com and become a part of our world.
Well, there you have it, my friends. Another show goes by so quickly, doesn't it? But don't worry, we'll be back next week with more to talk about. Meantime, be sure to visit the website speakupandstayalive.com, speakupandstayalive.com. It's where you can get a copy of the book, Speak Up and Stay Alive, The Patient Advocate Hospital Survival Guide, a book that so many of us need, whether we are in the hospital, visiting a friend in the hospital, have a loved one in the hospital. And I always tell folks, you don't even have to read the book. Just from the cover alone, we'll start a conversation if you simply lay the book on the tray table. Everyone who comes in the room will stop and say, "What is that?" It offers you the opportunity to start a conversation with everyone who walks in the room, and then they will know that you are different from everyone else, that you are an e-patient, educated, enlightened, equipped, and eager to get out alive. It's only $20 at the website, speakupandstayalive.com. And while you're there, check out the other links on the page, such as the speaking page, and invite me to speak to your group, club, business, church, organization, or even hospital. And if you know me, you know I always have so much to talk about. No one falls asleep on my watch during any of my speaking presentations. So give me a call, 440-725-5462. That is 440-725-5462. I can guarantee you this, your crowd will love it. No more time, but remember, I will be back next week. Same time, same place, but never the same information. Until then, I hope you have a healthy and a happy week. I am Pat Rulo, and I am the voice for informed choice. Are you in the market to purchase a home? Are you thinking of selling yours? Well, I've personally worked with the McCaskey team. They're conveniently located on Chardon Square. Give them a call, 440-773-5542. 440-773-5542. Ask for my friends Dan or Terry, or visit their website, McCaskeyTeam.com. That's McCaskeyTeam.com. McCaskeyTeam.com.